Hello, and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability news, brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, extremes of weather in a single week as global warming predicted to cause more deaths than all infectious diseases. Bribery by Big Pharma. Sustainable Development Goals strategy and the unexpected consequences of panda conservation. Joining me as usual to discuss these and more is Russell. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Mike. When you introduced that bribery by Big Pharma, I was thinking that we've got a very giant chap on it.
With a shotgun.
Here, get off my land, or you give me a couple hundred million quid.
Could be. We'll explain more later. We'll also be talking about coal, dams, BP, ice shelves, prawns, bricks, Mozilla, and allotments. I know how you like an allotment, Russell.
Oh, I love an allotment. If only I could get my hands on one.
A new study published by the National Bureau of Economic Research shows that by the end of the century, the number of global warming-related deaths will rival that of deaths caused by all infectious diseases combined. The study estimates that high, uncontrolled greenhouse gas emissions will increase global mortality rates to 73 deaths per 100,000 people. This number rivals that of deaths caused by all infectious diseases, including HIV/AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, yellow fever, and dengue fever. So this was a really interesting one, particularly in light of the current coronavirus pandemic, that, you know, despite all the infectious diseases that are around in the world, global warming is potentially going to cause more deaths than all those diseases.
Yeah, it's an interesting study. I mean, obviously, there is a bucket load of estimates, and very obviously well-judged estimates and well-researched estimates of stuff. But essentially, the study looked at the what I think it referred to as a U-curve, i.e. the two extremes of weather that the potentially global warming could create, very cold, very warm, which of course can increase heart attacks in hot weather, and hypothermia and other such matters in cold weather. So it's that introduction of the extremes of weather which is an interesting study.
Yeah. And I guess we've seen it this week in the UK. We've had the longest heat wave for 50, 60 years.
Yes.
Longest sustained temperatures. And then in the same week, we've had a flooding all around the country. So we had extremes in the same week. So,
devastating floodings up in Scotland, which took the train off the rails with a potential landslide. And it was reminiscent almost of Boscastle, not quite as severe, but, you know, these cars being thrown hither and thither by water. It's incredible.
It just brings some reality to some of these stories. You know, it's all very well us talking on the weekly sustainable news about climate change and global warming and, you know, some of the impacts of it. But it's actually real. And, we can see it happening this week in the UK.
There's still a bunch of people who will dispute whether it's man-made, but the world is warming. There's no disputing that.
Absolutely. And I think that I saw that, you know, we are fortunate in the UK in these kind of more temperate climates.
Temperate,
in Northern Europe, in that we don't have so many extremes. If you take the kind of equatorial tropics kind of countries, they have far more extreme weather than we do. And I think the study mentioned, was it Ghana, Bangladesh, Sudan, Pakistan, those kind of places.
It was one of the things said that our weather had hit 34 degrees in the city. And a friend of mine in Australia kind of laughed at it. I mean, 34 degrees, that's a vaguely... If it gets to 40, we start, you know, thinking, oh, this is hot. 45, and then you think, that is ridiculous temperatures, no matter what part of the world. So, the extremes seem to be with us. And even I was thinking it was on the radio, some guy say it started to hail here. you're there in the middle of summer with 34 degrees and it's hailing. It's just odd. The whole thing is odd.
Very strange. We'll watch that one with interest and see how those numbers change over the coming months and years.
And how they track it will be interesting.
Indeed. So now let's take a look at some other big sustainability news stories from the week. So firstly, company news. And BP plans to reduce oil and gas production by 40% to focus on clean energy. Part of me can't help thinking that, you know, is this BP being good corporate citizens, or is this BP looking at the future of oil and gas over the next 20, 30 years and perhaps seeing the writing on the wall for that industry?
Well, they'd be mad if they didn't, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, I think
the company itself said their demand for fossil fuels would decrease by 75% in the next 30 years. Yeah. So they got to do something, or else they'll be winding up, won't they?
And I think there's political movement building behind it. There is, a number of things that you look at the green investment stories that are coming out. People looking for those kind of greener things. So you know, I think they're being pushed in this direction rather than choosing it. But anyway,
yeah, yep.
Another huge company you may not have heard of, SAS, and I want your best boo here, Russell. Let me hear it.
Boo!
Boo. Why? Because SAS, they're a huge software analytics company. They've committed to achieving net zero carbon emissions. And this is a story we've run over the last few weeks on the Green Elephant News Show. Lots of companies committing to achieving the net zero carbon, and they're all committing to do it by 2030. But boo, SAS is looking to do it by 2050.
SAS, when you got people who are generating stuff like steel industry, which we've got an article and a new story in a minute, and they've got a real struggle in their hand. Hell are this company doing that would take them 30 years to work out how to become carbon zero?
Let's not give them any more airtime. A good organization that I think has been doing a good job for the last 20 years and in a different guise before that is Mozilla, who are laying off 250 people and planning a new focus on making money. And at first glance, this might not seem like a kind of sustainability story, but this is not just about climate. It's about people and impacts on society. And I think, you know, the whole Mozilla Foundation, Mozilla approach has been one that's, you know, to be admired, the community, the kind of very ethical stance they've taken. But it seems that they are, you know, reeling back from that approach and perhaps, you know, being more hard-nosed about making money.
I mean, obviously they had revenue. They licensed out their products to even companies like Google.
They did.
But there's obviously been some significant pinch that's caused them to change such a fundamental direction, I must admit.
Yeah.
It's very strange, that one.
Yeah, and a little bit sad. And finally, in the company news, ExxonMobil is to purchase 2.5 million barrels of renewable diesel. And this is every year for 5 years, which is one of those stories that on the face of it, well, that sounds good. It's got the word renewable in the title. But as ever, I'm not sure how much of a good news story this is. Renewable diesel is refined from other cast off fuels and oils and repurposed to make it usable again. So,
this one tends to be drawing the company they're looking to go with is Global Clean Energy, which uses camelina, a feedstock. So it doesn't replace foodstocks. But you can get it out of soybean and cooking oil and other stuff as well. It could be growed. But I suppose what first jumps to mind is that ExxonMobil are going to purchase 2.5 million barrels, which sounds a lot for a year. But BP's commitment in our last story was to drop oil production by 1 million barrels a day. So 2.5 million barrels is kind of the drop in the oily ocean, really.
It's the oily ocean. We've got a story on that coming up.
Oh, you're going.
In tech news, there's a new sunlight-powered technology that desalinates water in under 30 minutes. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to the United Arab Emirates, Russell. Been out that way?
No.
One of the most striking things as I was in a car traveling through there a few years back was the size of the world's largest desalination plant, which used huge amounts of energy to convert seawater into fresh drinking water. And it sounds like this organization have come up with a way of simplifying and using sunlight. There was a lot of difficult technical explanations of the way they transform molecules, and
I dug into this actually. It was quite interesting because the big saving is the sunlight bit. Because a desalination plant like the one in Saudi Arabia or Arab Emirates they have to heat the water, basically have to boil it off.
Evaporation kind of technique.
And evaporation. This one uses this, what's referred to as a metal organic framework, a very unique compound, which basically is a giant filter, and it filters the water. It just needs a little bit of electricity. And then the filters are cleaned using sunlight. It's brilliant. It's almost, it's kind of one of those things you kind of go, what? how does that work then? You the filter up. No, the filter gets cleaned in sunlight quite quickly. What do you use? Water? It was really odd. I'm intrigued. I must admit.
Good one. And let's hope that gets taken up.
It'd be good.
So Amazon forest now. Indigenous Amazon communities are using technology to protect the forest. And you get a special prize, Russell, if you can pronounce the name of the tribe.
I went for Uru Uwawau. That's what I was saying.
Oh, okay. Oh, I had Uru EU, and I don't know why I had EU. Uru EU war. Mine was more of a French dog. War.
Okay.
Anyway,
look that up if you dare, listener.
Yes, the tribe is and there's links to all our stories on the show notes page, so you can find them quite easily. But the indigenous tribes want to obviously protect their native habitat, and it's quite difficult to keep track of vast tracts of Amazon rainforest. So they've started using drones to keep an eye on the forest to see which areas are being regenerated as well as those that are being deforested. So people that you wouldn't expect using technology, using it.
We have this kind of, I have this probably ill-placed vision of an indigenous community barely touched by the Western world, but many of these have got power in their and they trade with the outside world, but they do hold faithful to their indigenous roots, and so to speak. And so, this is great news, really. There's people are using the best of technology to serve the best of nature and the community. So, I was quite chuffed with this.
Next story is about the purchase of a hydropowered smelter. It doesn't really matter. Sanjeev Gupta, who's an Australian businessman, but he's bought a hydropowered smelter with the aim of producing carbon neutral steel, which I found very interesting. So he's obviously, there's good people stuff, the jobs being saved, but hydropowered, great, uses less energy. How the steel becomes carbon neutral was a mystery and not fully explained. And I guess it was another one of those where, and we keep seeing these in the news that we come across, is that on the surface it looks like good,
great news,
renewable green news, but when you try and dig into the story and see the truth, it remains veiled. And I don't know, Russell, if you were able to find out how it's carbon neutral, but I wasn't.
No, not at all. It seems to be a bit of a, I use this phrase lightly, but kind of a puff piece is kind of a announcing it. Sanjeev Gupta is actually a British billionaire, so this is British investment into Tasmania. And this is previously owned by South's 32, which is a very big mining interest in Australia as a whole. But this Tasmanian electrometallurgical company is stuck at the top of very north of Tasmania, and I've been there. I've actually been to Launceston, and I have said that right to our Cornwall listeners. We would be used to Launceston, but no, Launceston it said. And it's near Plymouth as well, I think, this place. But I got no idea how the hell it worked. Interesting to watch that one as well.
Yeah, so
because it'd be good. I mean, if you can do it,
oh, be great. But always be on the lookout for stories that aren't what they seem. Is the news from them? So finally, tech news. A new nanotechnology turns the humble house brick into batteries. And again, this one sounds brilliant. So a traditional red house brick is a porous object. And what this technology does is it fills the pores with tiny nanofibers, fibers of plastic, conducting plastic that can store a charge. So each one of the bricks made to, that your house is made out of potentially, is a battery that can store some charge. And that just seems absolutely fantastic. Connected up to a solar cell on your roof, and you have one big battery in the shape of a house.
I mean, obviously, it's a bit of a, and I think they were very quick to say, "Whoa, you know, to be clear, we've hit 1% of of the charge rate. They'd like to get higher, but all said and done." You've got a whole house potentially. If it can store energy in some way, that's quite a brilliant use. And also when you're using these kind of which would be supercapacitors, essentially is what they're generating, store this debt, it can be recycled, can you be used many more times than perhaps a lithium iron battery. So it's brilliant, but supposedly you would eventually say, so this is a house which was built 25 years ago, but actually the energy storage isn't quite as great as it was when it was built. But it'd be an interesting sailing point for an estate agent to explain.
So other sustainability news in brief. So over 500 new dams are planned around the world for protected areas. The sad news about this story is not only that the dams will go in and affect these protected areas, but it's the fact that national governments seem to be rolling back existing laws to protect these protected areas to enable these dams to go ahead, and that seems like a backward step.
It's one of those things. They think they're doing the right thing, but are they? Are they really? Hydropower is obviously a good way of generating power, but it's not great if it's at the sacrifice of nature, and as we've seen in other places like China, at the expense of people.
Urgent action is needed to tackle chemicals' outlook on pollution as global production is set to double by 2030, and there are some quite frightening figures on the increase in the amount of chemicals and chemical waste that are coming in the next 10 years. That's a scary increase.
Not much you can say about that. That's a bad news story.
So on to a good news story. More coal power generation closed than opened around the world this year. So that sounds like a fantastic story. So aside from China, which still continues to grow its coal industry, it seems that other nations are rowing back. And India was highlighted in particular as being somewhere that has almost stopped all new coal production. So that's a good news story going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so. I suppose the worry you sit under the underlying is essentially the rest of the world is closing plants and China's building them because it's cheap. And I suppose you need to think about that next time you buy your cheap thing from China. Is the reason it's cheap is because they're using the dirtiest type of electric to run their plants.
Yeah, absolutely. A new label is available showing if plants are safe for bees and butterflies. So this is good, a new labelling scheme. When you buy your plants from the garden centre or wherever you buy them, you can now see whether those plants have been raised with pesticides and whether they're safe for bees and other pollinators. So it's a very
good thing to have. Great. It's great. When I first read this, I did wonder how the bees were going to read it, but
they're very clever, the bees.
So hold on, I'm not touching those are insecticide riddles.
Yeah. They all go to bee school to learn how to do it. In other news, Canada's last Arctic ice shelf has collapsed. So this was the final one. It was a size 20 kilometers larger than New York's Manhattan Island. That's how much it shrunk. The Mill and Ice Shelf in Canada, collapsed. And again, not much to say about that.
Yeah, you kind of, again, I suppose I'm reading a lot of stuff about, you know, people that are saying that man-made climate change is not real, but climate change is real. Global warming is real. There's nothing you can do. Whether we cause it or not is a matter for extreme dispute against the people debates, far more intelligent than I. But this is clearly showing that we will be full of water soon.
Yep. We mentioned oily oceans earlier, and a couple of weeks ago, you may have heard about the supertanker ran aground on a coral reef in Mauritius. The news this week is that the oil has been pumped out, so the pollution isn't going to get any worse. Although it's still not great. That's an unfolding story.
It was a million tons, wasn't it? And Mauritius is a small island, so a million tons of swamp it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, that's fine. There's plastic in your prawns. So new research finds that there's PVC in your prawns, which isn't great. In all samples they tested, they had plastic, but of all your shellfish, oysters came out best, followed by crabs, then squid, then prawns as being the worst. But the humble prawn, it has nowhere near the number of microplastics as a sardine does.
Which is gutting, really, because I avoid prawns there's no tomorrow, because I know what they feed on. Sardines, that's a bit more worrying. I actually eat those. So. I know it's interesting to think is that we could be in a situation where might be dangerous to eat seafood. Just odd.
News this week that Big Pharma is spending nearly $30 billion on medical marketing each year. What's surprising pharmaceuticals, not the Big Pharma. What's surprising about the spending is that around 68%, or about $20 billion. Goes to persuading doctors and other medical professionals, not consumers, of the benefits of prescription drugs. In other words, the Big Pharma shells out $20 billion each year to schmooze doctors and $6 billion on drug ads. So, I mean, I kind of knew that this happens. I've got friends and contacts who are, working in medicine, and I was aware of the days they spent on the surface being educated, but the education is sponsored by Big Pharma, and they're encouraged told about the benefits of some drugs as opposed to others. And so there's always an ethical issue there about which drugs to prescribe and which ones to use. But the scale of this is what surprised me, and I guess there's a bigger issue around the place of Big Pharma in the world and the impact on society. And you know, we're seeing this with coronavirus currently, with, you know, governments rushing to pre-order vaccines which aren't even ready yet, and kind of almost being held to ransom by Big Pharma. And it just feels like that they are operating, and we talk about this all the time, out of balance. It's all about the profit and not about the people or the planet.
I think there was this, according to the British Medical Journal, for every $1 spent on basic research, Big Pharma spends $19 on promotion and advertising. Wow. Now, that is just bonkers. You know, it's looking at 5% research and 95% marketing.
20 to 1, that's just crazy numbers.
19 to 1. But I always enjoyed the sitcom Scrubs, and it showed and on a couple of occasions it showed the ridiculous hold that drug sellers had in hospitals, in a comedic setting, all said and done. But you know, as with best comedy, it's always best if rooted in truth. And yeah, this is obviously clear. They spent a lot of money schmoozing doctors to prescribe their drugs. Yeah. And that's in America, and they've got obviously a different drug system for us.
It still happens in the UK, and I've no doubt it happens around the rest of certainly the westernized world.
And it needs to be regulated, because else the farmers will end up being the most powerful things on earth soon, because they're the people that are going to save your life.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. A 2018 survey found that more than 70% of businesses are using the Sustainable Development Goals as strategies for achieving sustainable growth targets. These firms have extensively adopted the Sustainable Development Goals, where both the business and society can grow together. Now, this is quite topical for us. If you've listened to the most recent Green Elephant show, you'll have heard the interview with Guillaume Lafortune, and Guillaume is the lead of the Sustainable Development Report that comes out each year. And we discussed a lot of about the goals, how countries are performing, how organizations are performing. But it was good to see that this survey said that a lot of businesses are using the goals as the basis of their sustainable growth. And they made some good examples of what organizations are doing. So, you know, if we take an example, goal 6, which is all about clean water and sanitization. Watson Envirotech is an Indian company, and they're focusing on water sanitization. And the aim of that is to provide sanitization in rural areas and slums. So there's goal 8, which is about decent work and economic growth. And it wouldn't be a Green Elephant news show without mentioning Microsoft, but
yay,
Microsoft's Youth Spark has helped people develop computer skills required for securing a job. So it just seems there's lots of organizations adopting the SGDs, which is a really good thing.
Did you pick up what the sample was of this? Obviously, it was a couple of years ago the study was done, but I didn't pick up. It says 70% of businesses, but I'm presuming this is big business, because we mentioned Microsoft and some large companies in the illustrations, but I didn't quite understand what the sample was, because what I found, especially in smaller business, and when we're talking to people, is they've never heard of the Sustainable Development Goals and haven't even thought about it. And it's only very recently the UK government has said that local government should be setting its strategies around this. And then I've spoken to people in local government, and they've gone, what's this then? SDGs? Never heard of them. And so, yeah, you know, I, I, I get that, but obviously if big business is adopting it, it will filter down. But there's a big campaign of teaching people about the SDGs first. No, I hate the expression SDGs.
I know, it's a tricky one.
Three-letter.
But, you know, we'll be promoting it and sharing it and trying to get that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's
in time, hopefully, it's like many things becomes adopted as a standard that everybody uses and follows.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if you look to a business and if you're particularly wedded to a particular goal, then, you know, you go work for a business that was working on that goal, wouldn't you? And that it's probably a good way of measuring companies is if they're actually working on this.
Yeah, absolutely. So on to giant pandas. Roughly three decades ago, the International Union for Conservation of Nature classified the giant panda as an endangered species. And I remember that from when I was younger. But in 2016, giant pandas moved from endangered to vulnerable on the official extinction list. Many conservationists cite successful panda conservation efforts to show that protection measures work. That said, protecting the pandas might come at a higher price than expected. A new study in Nature, Ecology and Evolution, panda protection efforts may have put other animals at risk, some of which now face possible extinction. So it seems that by putting environmental measures in place to save the panda, and it comes back to that word balance, that has altered the balance in that environment and put other animals at risk.
Yeah,
so
it's an interesting one. I when I read this, I put it in parallel with something I heard about wolves. I don't know if you know, it wouldn't be the football club.
No,
but it's like, yeah, let's not go into that. They reintroduced wolves back into Yellowstone National Park, and it's struck a balance that had been, so they'd had been overrun with deer in the park, which had had an impact on grasslands, which had an impact on smaller rabbit life and, you know, that kind of, and it had this huge knock-on effect. But by adding in a pack of wolves to obviously naturally hunt the deer, they returned a balance to a place that wasn't. So it can be done, but it's like with anything, I think we've seen this with, let's be controversial, say something like equality.
Yep.
You know, the necessary swing to become equal means you have to become unequal to start off with, to strike a balance. And maybe this will balance out. Maybe. But it is, nature is a brilliant thing. Probably when it's left to itself.
it will recover when it needs to.
Yeah. Leave it alone.
And finally, before we go, enjoy this, Russell. Monday marked the beginning of National Allotments Week 2020, a time when the number of protective allotmenteers far exceeds the number of available allotments. And we discussed this on a previous show. As well as providing a great source of social connection for people in their later years, allotments are also a fantastic way to introduce the youngest generations to the delights of growing your own, reusing, recycling, and interacting with the great outdoors. And I guess that's where you're off to this weekend, Russell. Is it on your allotment?
I haven't got an allotment. I wish I had an allotment. I'm ramming vegetables and other such delights. To be honest, Sarah is into our garden, our little garden, but
other places.
And
with the delightful thought of Russell ramming vegetables into places. Just to say, you can find links to all of the stories we've discussed on our show page at greenelephant.show. If you've got any stories or comments you wish to share, then find us across social on at greenellipod. So thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week. Bye.
Bye.